Hello, hello, hello. Here's Marlenka with another episode, continuing with The Power of Now by Eckhart Tolle, about thought. Your mind is an instrument, a tool. It's there to be used for a specific task, and when the task is completed, you lay it down. As it is, I would say about 80 to 90% of most people's thinking is not only repetitive and useless, but because of its dysfunctional and often negative nature, much of it is also harmful. Observe your mind, and you will find this to be true. It causes a serious leakage of vital energy. This kind of compulsive thinking is actually an addiction. What characterizes addiction? Quite simply this. You no longer feel that you have the choice to stop. It seems stronger than you. It also gives you a false sense of pleasure, pleasure that invariably turns into pain. Why should we be addicted to thinking? Because you are identified with it, which means that you derive your sense of self from the content and activity of your mind. Because you believe that you would cease to be if you stopped thinking. As you grow up, you form a mental image of who you are, based on your personal and cultural conditioning. We may call this phantom self the ego. It consists of mind activity and can only be kept going through constant thinking. Now, the term ego means different things to different people. But when I use it here, it means a false self, created by unconscious identification with the mind. To the ego, the present moment hardly exists. Only past and future are considered important. This total reversal of the truth accounts for the fact that in the ego mode, the mind is so dysfunctional. It's always concerned with keeping the past alive because without it, who are you? It constantly projects itself into the future to ensure its continued survival and to seek some kind of release or fulfillment there. It says, one day, when this, when that, or the other thing happens, then I'm going to be okay. Then I'm going to be happy, at peace. Even when the ego seems to be concerned with the present, it is not the present that it sees. It misperceives it completely because it looks at it through the eyes of the past. Or it reduces the present to a means to an end that always lies in the mind-projected future. Just observe your mind and you'll see that this is how it works. The present moment holds the key to liberation. But you cannot find the present moment as long as you are your mind. I don't want to lose my ability to analyze and discriminate, you may think. Discriminate. The gift of thought is the most precious thing we have. We would just be another species of animal. The predominance of mind is no more than a stage in the evolution of consciousness. We need to go on to the next stage now, as a matter of urgency. Otherwise, we will be destroyed by the mind, which has grown into a monster. More of this will be spoken in more detail later. Thinking and consciousness are not synonymous. Thinking is only a small aspect of consciousness. Thought cannot exist without consciousness. But consciousness does not need thought. Now, enlightenment means rising above thought, not filling back to a level below thought, the level of an animal or a plant. In the enlightened state, you still use your thinking mind when needed, but in a much more focused and effective way than before. You use it mostly for practical purposes, but you are free of the involuntary internal dialogue, the voice in the head, and then there is inner stillness. When you do use your mind, and particularly when a creative solution is needed, you oscillate every few minutes or so between thought and stillness, between mind and no mind. No mind is consciousness without thought. Only in that way is it possible to think creatively, because only in that way does thought have any real power. Thought alone, when it is no longer connected with the much vaster realm of consciousness, quickly becomes barren, insane, destructive. The mind is essentially a survival machine. Attack and defense against other minds, gathering, storing, and analyzing information, this is what it is good at, but that's not at all creative. All true artists, whether they know it or not, create from a place of no mind, from inner stillness. The mind then gives form to the creative impulse or insight. Even the great scientists have reported that their creative breakthroughs came at a time of mental quietude. The surprising result of a nationwide inquiry among America's most eminent mathematicians, including Einstein, to find out their working methods was that thinking plays only a subordinate part in the brief, decisive phase of the creative act itself. So I would say that the simple reason why the majority of scientists are not creative is not because they don't know how to think, but because they don't know how to stop thinking. It wasn't through the mind, through thinking, that the miracle that is life on earth, or your body, were created and are being sustained. There is clearly an intelligence at work that is far greater than the mind. How can a single human cell measuring 1/1000th of an inch across contain instructions within its DNA that would fill 1,000 books of 600 pages each? The more we learn about the workings of the body, the more we realize just how vast is the intelligence at work within it, and how little we know. When the mind reconnects with that, it becomes a most wonderful tool. It then serves something greater than itself. Mind, in the way I use the word, is not just thought. It includes your emotions as well as all unconscious mental emotional reactive patterns. Emotion arises at the place where mind and body meet. It is the body's reaction to your mind, or you might say, a reflection of your mind in the body. For example, an attack thought or a hostile thought will create a buildup of energy in the body that we call anger. The body is getting ready to fight. The thought that you are being threatened, physically or psychologically, causes the body to contract. And this is the physical side of what we call fear. Research has shown that strong emotions even cause changes in the biochemistry of the body. These biochemical changes represent the physical or material aspect of the emotion. Of course, you are not usually conscious of all your thought patterns. And it's only often through watching your emotions that you can bring them into awareness. The more you're identified with your thinking, your likes, your dislikes, your judgments, interpretations, which is to say, the less present you are as the watching consciousness, well, then the stronger the emotional energy charge will be, whether you are aware of it or not. If you cannot feel your emotions, if you are cut off from them, you will eventually experience them on a purely physical level as a physical problem, a symptom. A great deal has been written about this in recent years, so we don't need to go into it here. A strong, unconscious emotional pattern may even manifest as an external event that appears to just happen to you. For example, I have observed that people who carry a lot of anger inside, without being aware of it and without expressing it, are more likely to be attacked verbally or even physically by other angry people, and often for no apparent reason. They have a strong emanation of anger that certain people pick up subliminally, and that triggers their own latent anger. Now, if you have difficulty feeling your emotions, start by focusing attention on the inner energy field of your body. Feel your body from within. This will also put you in touch with your emotions. We will explore this in more detail later. Now, you accept that an emotion is the mind's reflection in the body. But sometimes there's a conflict between the two. The mind says no, while the emotion says yes, or the other way around. But if you really want to know your mind, the body will always give you a truthful reflection. So look at the emotion, or rather, feel it in your body. If there's an apparent conflict between them, the thought will be the lie, the emotion will be the truth. Not the ultimate truth of who you are, but the relative truth of your state of mind at that moment. Conflict between surface thoughts and unconscious mental processes is certainly common. You may not yet be able to bring your unconscious mind activity into awareness as thoughts, but it will always be reflected in the body as an emotion. And of this you can become aware. To watch an emotion in this way is basically the same as listening to or watching a thought described earlier. The only difference is that while a thought is in your head, an emotion has a strong physical component, and so is primarily felt in the body. You can then allow the emotion to be there without being controlled by it. You no longer are the emotion. You are the watcher, the observing presence. If you practice this, all that's unconscious in you will be brought into the light of consciousness. So yes, observing our emotions is as important as observing our thoughts. Make it a habit to ask yourself, what's going on inside me at this moment? That question will point you in the right direction, but don't analyze it, just watch. Focus your attention within. Feel the energy of the emotion. If there's no emotion present, take your attention more deeply into the inner energy field of your body. That is the doorway into being. An emotion usually represents an amplified and energized thought pattern, and because of its overpowering energetic charge, it's not easy initially to stay present enough to be able to watch it, because it wants to take you over. And it usually succeeds unless there is enough presence in you. If you are pulled into unconscious identification with the emotion through lack of presence, which is normal, the emotion temporarily becomes you. Often a vicious circle builds up between your thinking and the emotion. They feed each other. The thought pattern creates a magnified reflection of itself in the form of an emotion. And the vibrational frequency of the emotion keeps feeding the original thought pattern. So you see, by dwelling mentally on a situation or event or person that is perceived as the cause of the emotion, the thought feeds energy to the emotion, which in turn energizes the thought pattern, and so on and on and on. Basically, all emotions are modifications of one primordial, undifferentiated emotion that has its origin in the loss of awareness of who you are beyond name and form. Because of its undifferentiated nature, it's hard to find a name that precisely describes this emotion. Fear comes close, but apart from a continuous set of sense of threat, it also includes a deep sense of abandonment and incompleteness. It may be best to use a term that is as undifferentiated as that basic emotion and simply call it pain. One of the main tasks of the mind is to fight or remove that emotional pain, which is, of course, one of the reasons for its incessant activity, but all it can ever achieve is to cover it up temporarily. In fact, the harder the mind struggles to get rid of pain, the greater becomes the pain. The mind can never find the solution, nor can it afford to allow you to find the solution, because it is itself an intrinsic part of the problem. Imagine a chief of police trying to find an arsonist when the arsonist is the chief of police. You will not be free of that pain until you cease to derive your sense of self from identification with the mind, which is to say, from ego. The mind is then toppled from its place of power, and being reveals itself as your true nature. Now, positive emotions, such as love and joy, are inseparable from your natural state of inner connectedness with being. Glimpses of love and joy, or brief moments of deep peace, are possible whenever a gap occurs in the stream of thought. For most people, such gaps happen rarely and accidentally, in moments when the mind is rendered speechless, sometimes triggered by great beauty, extreme physical exertion, or even great danger. Suddenly, there is an inner stillness, and within that inner stillness, there's a subtle but intense joy, love, and peace. Well, usually such moments are short-lived, as the mind quickly resumes its noise-making activity so that what we call thinking. Love, joy, and peace cannot flourish until you have freed yourself from mind dominance. But they are not what I would call emotions. They lie beyond the emotions, on a much deeper level. So you need to become fully conscious of your emotions and be able to feel them before you can feel that which lies beyond them. We will pause and continue in the next episode, continuing with emotion. Thank you so much for tuning in to Auroville Radio and listening to the words of Eckhart Tolle. Until next week, Marlenka signing off.
This is Auroville Radio, voices from the City of Dome.